We're back on the air, and we're back at Tarlo Breed, Hart & Rogers, our host for all these segments currently. That means my host is the one, the only, Mark Furman. Hello, Mark.
Hi, Jeffrey. Great to be with you.
Thank you, Mark. I look forward to these segments at Tarlo Breed. They're always of high caliber, and you have not let us down again. Our next guest is a first-timer to the show, as far as I know, Richard Gelb, partner at Gelb & Gelb. That's an easy name to remember. You can use the same towels at the office as at home. So welcome, Richard. Tell us about your practice.
Sure, thank you, and thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, I have a practice which my wife and I started in 1987. My son is our third partner. We have other people working with us. And what our focus is, me personally, is complex business litigation and the intersection of civil, criminal, regulatory proceedings and mostly financial services and healthcare. My wife does probate and domestic relations, and my son Dan does what I do plus general criminal. He's a former prosecutor. And one of our specialties is electronic discovery and evidence, and he and I wrote the book for Massachusetts MCLE on the subject, and he's a national expert on the subject.
Your son?
Yes.
Wow. Interesting. Was it always the plan to get the whole family in the business?
Well, in 87, it was a plan for my wife to go into business. My son always liked the law. He has a JD MBA from BC, so we never pushed him into the business, but it's something he wanted to do.
Right. So who runs the business today?
My wife. That's why we haven't had any conflicts since 87, because everybody listens to her.
So, Mark, I'm gonna ask you the same question. I mean, you know, you do a lot of litigation. Have you worked with and against Richard at times?
Well, we've never worked against each other, but Richard was an expert witness in a case that I tried a number of years ago, and I have a lot of respect for Richard, and he certainly did a good job in that case. So he's a student of the law, and he devotes some time to continuing legal education programs, and not long ago, as I was getting my CLE credits that I need for New Hampshire, where I'm also a member of the bar along Massachusetts, had the pleasure to watch Richard and his son in a continuing legal education program. So, Richard's been around for a while despite his youthful appearance, he's been a well-known litigator in the city for a long time.
Yeah, my respect for is mutual.
You know, I read a little bit about you, and I don't even know where to start. There's so many things that you do that I find interesting, and I'll just think, you know, the whole area of securities, non-competitive agreements, but corporate rating and trade secrets, you know, for me really pops off the list. I don't know if you mind my sort of asking you about that, because I find that whole area to be very interesting for me, being a management consultant.
Yeah, well, you know, non-competes, you know, getting somewhat eroded from the legislation, but I think the difference between corporate rating and non-compete is normally a non-compete is the subject of an agreement. Corporate rating is a fiduciary duty. So, for example, if you had 10 securities brokers at a broker-dealer and another broker-dealer does what's called a lift-out, brings the whole group over, under certain circumstances, that can be a breach of fiduciary duty, and that's where the corporate rating concept comes in.
Interesting. Does your wife practice a different, and son different area of the law?
Yeah, well, my wife does divorce work, will contests, et cetera. My son does what I do in general criminal. He was a former prosecutor, so he does everything from driving under, financial crimes, the whole gamut of criminal cases. And he and I work together on white-collar crime cases.
Interesting. Do you have a lot of other people on staff other than the three of you?
No, and I can explain why.
Sure.
So we have one associate who was our paralegal ago, and she went to NYU Law and then two large law firms. And we have, she's the associate, we have two paralegals and other support staff. But our concept is team building. So our cases are normally large cases, or at least high stakes cases, most cases against major law firms, but we bring a team concept to it. So we usually serve as the lead counsel. We bring other people aboard, or we're brought aboard, experts, other lawyers, et cetera. It's almost the barrister-solicitor relationship. And everybody bills the client directly, so we don't have any internal billings or overrides or anything else. And then what we do is, and I can talk more about it if people are interested, but
I am.
We use technology.
Right.
So our ideal client would be a wealthy individual who owns a company, a middle market company, a member of a board of directors, who has a high stakes litigation, but wants to be involved, as opposed to a large corporation where the in-house counsel may just not be involved, but just monitoring the case. So we have sophisticated clients, and what we do is use technology to create a virtual office. What's happened is the document management programs have gone substantially down in costs. That's a function of competition and the cloud, which eliminates overhead. So that in the past, they were so expensive, you could really only justify them on very large document cases. But because they have gone so much down in price, you can create virtual offices, which allows a collaborative approach. So for example, we were called into a case by a boutique tax law firm. And it was a very complicated case out of the Jersey Islands. It was a tax deferral situation for a venture capitalist that blew up. So the client had a PhD in quantum math. And it was a very complicated lost profit scenario. So he was able to be a user. We replicated electronically the expert file, and he had access to all the documents. So he was able to do a lot of calculations independently of us, which reduced the cost and brought his expertise into the case.
Wow, does this apply both to public companies and private companies, or do you work in a specific niche?
Well, we do both private and public companies. We prefer the private companies for this reason. Is large law firms usually have relationships with experts and vendors that are more like a purchasing agent, because you have 1,000 lawyers, not everybody's gonna make their individual relationships. So they normally use large companies that facilitate everything from first photocopy to something in court. We don't like that approach. We have very individual, long-term relationships. So, for example, if some of these big companies, you'll say, who does electronic discovery? They'll say, people who used to be partners at large firms. Well, we have relationships with people who used to be in law enforcement. We have relationships with people who have advanced degrees in computer science. When you deal with securities law, everything theoretically is a criminal case. Mm. So the calculus of whether or not you get prosecuted is less the violation than the practicality of the case. So for example, let's assume you have a securities offering that's, the U.S. Attorney's Office may not look at it if it's less than $250,000. Whereas if you have an insider trading case, they'll look at it. If it's $1,000, they'll look at who did it. So for example, if it's a fiduciary like a lawyer, the SEC will be more aggressive. The distinction between the two is that for the first case, you have to devote resources to it. So you have to figure out it's a crime, but which crimes do we prioritize? For insider trading cases, if they set a threshold, people would do insider trading under that threshold. So the prophylactic there is to go after a psychiatrist who did insider trading because a patient was the head of a company and told them that they were going to have a public an offering of some sort.
How dysfunctional of a psychiatrist.
Well, there's an actual case like that.
I'm sure. I was being
and then for example, you know, we represent a lot of people who are licensed. You know, whether it be doctors, securities registered representatives, etc. So when you decide whether or not someone takes the fifth, it can have draconian aspects to it. They get fired for not cooperating in internal investigation. They could get their license taken away for not cooperating. So you have to, you know, make a balanced decision as to whether or not the client should be taking the Fifth Amendment. What we do is there's a loose consortium of about 50 or more FBI agents, former FBI agents around the country. So we have one lead person into that group. So we try to find an FBI agent who worked on that particular case with the U.S. Attorney's Office when they were at the FBI. And we bring the client in with that former FBI agent, and we go through actual role-playing very formally, as if the client were being interviewed by the FBI. Then the former agent tells us and the client, if they were still at the FBI, what they would do next, which makes it much less theoretical than just saying, well, it's criminal, you should take the fifth.
Interesting. Richard, sadly, we've run out of time, so I'm just wondering, we could talk to you a lot longer. You're clearly a thought leader in this whole area. If somebody needs to find you at Gelb & Gelb or the firm, how would they do that?
Well, we have a website at gelbgelb.com, and that's the easiest way.
Great. Thank you for being on the show. We hope you return again and talk to us some more.
Thank you.
I also want to thank Mark Furman, who's also co-hosting the show today, and also the firm of Tarla Breed Hart and Rogers. Thanks again, Mark.
Sure.
We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back with more stories after these short messages.
Well, thanks.